This is it. We are here. Welcome.
Oh, my God.
Ladies and gentlemen.
Theme song only needs four more verses. And Graham, was that you singing, Graham?
That is me singing.
Popcorn hits.
I was in a Disney teen show. We did. Mm-hmm. We traveled.
A Disney teen band?
A Disney teen band. Oh, yeah.
Well, if it's a Disney contract, you're still in it.
Was it called 98 Degrees?
No, it was called the 500 Yards. They were never allowed to perform within
500 yards. Elementary
within
school.
No, within their audience. They literally, all of them had restraining orders from their audience. They said, why is the stage so far away? Every single one of these are child predators.
By law.
Comedy Bandit!
Maybe we should just write into introducing our guests.
If they haven't figured it out, ladies and gentlemen, there's only one comedy duo on the planet that I know of.
That comes in this hot.
That looks and sounds alike. Ladies and gentlemen, the Sklar Brothers.
Thank you.
It's like two joke grenades. As soon as it starts.
Two joke grenades. Up. If that's not the name of your guys' next album, I don't know what the fuck you're doing.
By the way, I was watching an old James Bond movie the other night. It was like Roger Moore. I forget what, I'm so bummed that I forgot what the Spy Who Loved Me.
Sure.
That was it. Mm-hmm. And it was as if when they were fighting in the mountain or wherever they were fighting in, like the submarines and stuff, it was like everybody had just learned how to use grenades. it was like everyone was throwing grenades. Like they stopped using guns for a period of time. It was like just a guy running, throwing a grenade. It made me laugh so hard. I was like, why aren't they using guns? And it's just like, you literally had...
It's like when they introduced the telestrator to like Monday Night Football. They were just doing it all the time. Mm-hmm.
So now it's just like, I got a grenade. I got to throw it.
Yeah, well, they just came in.
Yeah.
Yeah, into the battle.
Yeah.
And then everyone has to do that weird grenade
arm. Right.
You're not allowed to bend your elbow. Yeah.
You're not allowed to throw it like a thing. You have to just toss it like it's a
hook shot.
Yeah, like a sky hook.
That's the grenade arc.
Because if you bend your arm and use your wrist, it could blow up in your hand.
I don't know about that. No, if you bend your arm and use your wrist, it could be thrown way more accurately.
Yeah.
Like on a line drive. No. And you want to lob it.
You want to not know where it might land.
Go back and watch that movie in that final scene, and I want you to count how many people throw grenades.
I wonder if we get an email going, you know, the proper way to throw a grenade.
Oh, I hope there's a grenade.
Wait, on this podcast?
Yeah.
Someone's going to send you an email.
Yeah.
It's called Comedy Film Nerds.
Yeah.
Got it.
The best grenade throw, then they're going to list a foot.
Actually, here's a link to a YouTube where they show you how to grenade throw correctly.
Ladies and gentlemen, you're listening to the sweet, sultry sounds of Randy and Jason Sklar, a.k.a. the Sklar Brothers.
Thank you for having us.
One of you has to leave.
We'll let you decide.
You guys figure out which one.
One of us gets voted off the island.
Exactly.
We get midwayed out of this comedy team. What if we did that?
I have always...
So the first movie review is an elimination challenge.
Yes, it is.
It is.
Why not? So true.
And I, to this day, want to believe, I know you guys are both married with kids, but I still want to believe you guys have bunk beds. I still want.
Never had in our lives. Our parents were smart enough to put us in separate rooms, but I will say this.
Really?
I had
to share a room with my brother.
Because you were poor.
No, we grew up in St. Louis where everyone was poor, but we all got our own rooms.
Yeah, we had our own room, and that was fine. We never had bunk beds ever. But I did tell my wife that she's like, what are you doing today? What's your day today? And I was like, I'm going to do Graham's podcast. And she, without missing a beat and totally earnestly, was like, is Graham out here now?
Oh, my God, that riff.
Oldest riff.
Are you out here now? Was it like at a party with me, you, and Greg Fitzsimmons? And
then you did it on stage a bunch.
Yeah.
Largo.
Yeah, Zach and I did it on stage. Are you out here now?
I'm in Largo right now. Is Largo out here right now?
What's happening now?
That was when a lot of people were moving from New York to L.A.
Are you out here now? That was like the question we had. Are you out here now?
Is Graham out here?
Yeah, I got a third. And then the guy, you would always respond with like some, I got a third look deal from KTLA's back pocket.
That's right. I got a two-figure deal from the guy in the parking lot at Vaughn's.
Yeah.
Two-figure deal.
Two-finger.
Two-finger deal.
Yeah. The other constant riff we would do is Johnny Carson talking about... 70s and 80s
basketball
NBA players coming on the show.
Because we were talking about Etsy before this. I'm so mad. And Wayne Fetterman did a great bit of like Johnny Carson today dealing with like doing the headlines today. But
have you seen this Etsy?
That is wild.
Apparently people are making their own crap.
I don't
selling it online.
Like I need another crocheted yarmulke. Yet I'm not even Jewish.
Crocheted yarmulke, because we actually sell at ComedyFilmNerds.com, guys.
Yes,
crocheted yarmulke.
Another just a dollar, picture we'll
of
sign
the
it.
With a picture of the Ghostbusters reboot, line around it, line right through it.
You guys also were in opening night of the very first ever Los Angeles Podcast Festival.
Oh, amazing. Yes.
I'll never forget introducing Beautiful. You. The energy of the crowd, because everyone was like, holy shit, this is happening?
Yeah,
this is the first time and the first one.
Ever.
It's such a cool event, and thank you for including us in it, and we've done it through the years and love it.
You guys are
love
fantastic.
It's great because you kind of drew a circle around the people who are podcast fans. Like, you were the first or early adapters to be like, yeah, there are podcast lovers out there. They probably would enjoy getting together at a festival of sorts.
And a chance to see, like, all of them over the course of a weekend.
Because it's such a personal thing to listen. Yep. Because most people, and I listen to podcasts as well, so I know when I'm walking and, like, two voices are in my ears, like, between my head. It's very different than listening to radio. And so for people to be like, oh, my God, I get to see all of my favorites. And there's always a lot of crossover. Yeah. I get to see all my favorite podcasters do it live. It's pretty special.
Fuck it. We'll do it live.
Yeah.
Well, that was the and one of the coolest things, and we'll get into the movies, is the first year, a lot of people said this to me. Like in years past, in the last couple of years, people go, you know, I came to year one alone. Mm-hmm. And now we're all like friends.
A group, right.
Meet,
oh, yeah.
Now it's like a reunion. I can't believe we're in year six.
Year six?
It's phenomenal.
Yeah, October
6th through the 8th.
6th through the 8th at the beautiful Biltmore Hotel.
Biltmore Hotel. Go to LAPodFest.com, ladies and gentlemen. Mm-hmm. Get yourself
still tickets left.
Love it. Get yourself a get them now because they'll go.
Get yourself a fake police badge.
Let's do it.
So since Jason, you got to leave early. You saw the movie Landline.
Yeah,
I saw it today.
All right.
Okay.
Thank you so much for getting up
early. I got up to see something
because
the only movies we see because we have little kids is a lot of little kid shit.
Right.
And so I wanted to see an adult film. It's not really an adult film.
You take your 3-year-old to see Dunkirk. Ugh.
Yeah, it's weird.
Little kid movie.
It's so boring.
Too much more, Daddy. but yeah, no, I saw Landline and I really liked it. If I could give a review, it would be like if Noah Baumbach was a woman and told essentially, it's not the same story, but it is a very New Yorkish kind of
Squid and the Whale.
Throwback. Mm-hmm. Squid and the Whale was the 80s. This was the 90s in New York. Coming of age story, but about girls instead of boys. It was a very female.
Gillian Robespierre is the director.
She did a great job. I mean,
anything Turturro does.
Turturro was amazing, and Edie Falco was great. Right. They were both incredible.
And Jenny Slate.
Jenny Slate is
friend,
a star.
I'm like going to
say
star.
It right now. She's a star. She was cute. She was funny. She pulled the heart and. And Jay Duplass, that's the other one. Jay Duplass, you go, can you pull and do something different from Transparent? Because I binged
such
that, I watched that, I love the
Transparent.
Character work on that. Mm-hmm. I mean, I'm not just kissing the ass of this film, but I was totally in it. I really loved it. And I felt like, Jay Duplass was great in it and played a very different role.
The question is, will it go wide? Kind of like The Big Sick did. The Big Sick was only out in 5 theaters, and then
Amazon spends $12 million, they've got plans for the film.
Yeah definitely. Well, I think it's already made $10 million or something like that.
What,
so
The Big Sick?
Landline.
Landline. It basically, it's a coming age story of like a family in New York, or like what is it?
It's a coming of age story. Two girls, one who's just out of college, and one who's still in high school on her way to college, and then a mother and father, and they learn that their father had an affair or was having an affair throughout their life. Mm-hmm. And so it's how they grapple with that, who knows that, and then how that sort of affects their lives as they, the older sister, Jenny Slate, is engaged to be married to Jay Duplass, and they're in their relationship. And so how does this sort of news and how do they...
What are the ripple effects through the rest of the family?
Right. Why are you saying that?
I don't know.
I was there.
I'm trying to make sense of what you're saying. I'm trying to get you to a fucking conclusion.
No, but
it
is...
I thought you guys shared a brain. I thought was a sort of a board.
He loaned it to me for the 2 hours that I
turned it off.
But it was great. I mean, and I thought what I loved about it is it did harken back to old
90s
New York
indie
where
films.
We lived in, right?
It reminded me in scope of like a Walking and Talking, maybe just a little bit bigger than that. But it had the indie feel. It had the New York feel. I found myself loving, you know, because we were actually the same age as Jenny Slate in the movie
right.
in 1995. So in that time, we were that age. So there was, I very much related to, I guess, except she was engaged, but I related to their, the characters.
It's like when you
time.
Just moved to LA and you watched Swingers.
Yes. Yeah. Or when we were 94. Or you look back on that, because I remember right after that movie came out, I remember going to
the
Derby.
Places yeah.
Derby
in.
Or the.
Marty and Elaine.
Right. Yeah. And I remember going and seeing them there and being like, oh my God, this is like we're in this.
They have the schedule of the New Beverly on the fridge.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah. Right. That's it. Yes. And he's wearing an In-N-Out shirt for like half of the movie. You know, like, yeah, playing golf, but the Los Feliz 3, you know what I mean, with Ron Livingston. It just, all those places, we hit him. And when we came here, it was a very different place. I'll go back and watch, for that very nostalgia, I'll go back and watch, like, the Tenacious D 6 episode run on from HBO. They have it on HBO Go just to be like, oh, yeah, this is what the 90s were like in L.A. in the comedy scene, because you saw so many faces and people that you knew and people we were friends with. And then at the same time, like, there'd be a shot of, like, Fairfax and a weird store and, like, kind of, they were like, oh, this is what it was like back then.
Right. So well, that store's not there anymore.
No, that store is gone. That store has been replaced
whichever
by a sneaker
store. Talking
store.
About. Yes.
Yes. Yeah.
But so Landline did a lot that for you, because you guys lived in New York.
We lived in New York in the mid-90s. We were there. We had just graduated in 94 from Michigan, and then we went to New York to do stand-up. And so it was very cool. And I will say this. There was this moment where Turturro, like, walks into, I'm not giving anything away, to a jail cell. And I was like, is this the night of? There was a minute where I was like, wait a second.
Why is he sticking
Why are they pinning that murder on that Arab boy?
He's sticking a chopstick into his foot.
He's got eczema on his foot.
Scraping off the
But no, but he's
skin.
So good. He's so good. I mean, he is just such a great actor. I could watch him all day long.
I could watch him, like, fuck with his mouth for 30 minutes.
Oh, dude.
I just
went back and watched Rounders.
Yeah.
Just because I was like, I
Turturro.
Just want to see him go, you know, you little prick. My kids eat. I got alimony. Yeah. I pay for braces. You know, like.
Yes.
Yeah. Yeah.
I mean, buy everything. And
he
so.
He also has like a little bit of a lateral lisp, and it's just, I don't know. It's just fucking great.
Yeah.
It was great to see. And he sells it. He sells whatever they're selling.
It also seems like a real actor's actor. Like when he's not doing movies and stuff, he's like, I'm in New York doing this play. And
yeah.
I'm digging into the hardest material ever because that's what I do.
It was
like
the other
Barton
part.
Barton Fink is a great
example. Barton Fink.
Totally.
Yes. Mm-hmm. Unbelievable. Totally. I mean, the other thing, and then unreal in The Big Lebowski, like totally playing opposite anything
and
he does.
And pulling it off.
Okay.
Owning
so
it.
That character and the choices that he made in The Big Lebowski
are
huge. Like so over the top choices, but then you're like, oh man, I believe him as this thing, this
I've seen
child
that guy
molester.
In a bowling alley.
Yes.
Yeah. And I know bowling guys are nuts that they, no one would be, it's not that he pulled a gun out, it's that he pulled a gun out during league play. Like that's the
problem. That was the issue.
Wait, you gonna fuck this up? God.
Try to pull that shit with me. Like,
it's so good. So good. And the other part about it that really spoke to me that was very intense was, as a parent of a kid, of a daughter, I have a daughter who's 3 and a son who's 8, much younger kids, but like seeing like teenage parents in a New York house in the 1990s fight with the kids, and the kids saying, fuck off and get the fuck out of my room. And they just leave the room because there's really nothing you can do in that moment. But then they come back together to love each other. And there was just a lot in that I was, as a parent, was like, oh my God,
I'm on the cusp of that.
You're seeing a preview. Yeah.
A little bit and going like, oh, you can't let that first fuck you like go straight to your heart and sink you. You cannot do that. You got to just walk away and know that your kids love you. They're just saying stuff they can't control.
How old
themselves.
Are your kids, Randy?
Mine are 12 and almost 10. So like I'm on the cusp of.
Two girls.
Right. Two girls.
I've got
like
12 and 8, so
okay,
I know
so
what you're talking
we're
about.
We're like right there.
It's like, oh, I can start to see the attitude start to creep in, and I wonder what teenage years are right around the corner.
My youngest daughter
who I think will be involved in like boys and relationships before the older one. That's just their disposition. Like there was a little boy that she kind of likes, and you know, I mean, whatever that means in going into fifth grade. I kind of remember we had friends that were into boys and girls and whatnot, and they just both we happened to be at the dentist yesterday at the same time.
Todd.
Watching her watching her behavior change around this guy, I'd never seen it before, never. She was like really goofy. She was trying to be really funny. She was like really, it was bizarre. And I was like, oh God, so things are continentally shifting.
And then you see it and they do a great job in this film of playing it real. And I'm saying that's believable, that interaction. And also, it's like the movie
was
is
it funny. Did you laugh?
I did laugh. I laughed some. I didn't laugh out loud like I was going to lose my shit.
Yeah, but
was,
did you laugh? And I mean, to me, I thought you talk about the squid and the whale. Jeff Daniels' character may be one of the best, most well-drawn, well-acted characters I've ever seen. He was so consistent with who he was. Even in the hospital at the end, when he's like, he's making choices as that character in a way that. You're like, this is just brilliant, brilliant acting, brilliant writing.
Well, they take a guy who's a high status guy his whole life, and then they give his wife the higher status in the field that he was in. And immediately
he's... In Squid and the Whale.
Yeah, in Squid and the Whale, and you're struggling to see if he can, how he copes with it. Right. This is a little less, this is a little less, I don't know why I felt like it was a little less dark, but there was a lot of darkness in it.
And Edie Falco plays the mom.
Edie Falco plays the mom, and she's great. And they play, you know, people
That's
who
strange.
Are married, and they
Where
just...
Where has she been great before?
Yeah.
Where has she pulled it off?
They play, you know, people who are married, and the kids are grown up, and like, the question where the love is in the relationship, they did it very real. And it was one of those movies where I could have watched it for another 20 minutes. Mm-hmm. It was one of the movies where I felt like, I'm in. This was an entertaining, like, time in the theater. I went alone, but like I just...
So you didn't watch it on demand. You went into the theater.
I went into the theater and watched it.
Oh, is it available on demand right now?
So I don't know. Sometimes they do a simultaneous
double release. No, I watched it in the theater, which I loved. I loved doing that. And it felt great. Yeah. And you know,
you went at parent time. That's, you know.
Yeah, parent day. Yeah, get off of camp and then it's me time.
Friday at, you know, 10, 11 a.m. is usually my movie time.
It's right. It's great. It's a great time to see a movie. It's empty and you actually get a chance to enjoy it. And I'm going to recommend this movie to people because I feel like, you know, in the same way that that going to see The Big Sick and supporting Kumail and some other people that we know, again, I felt like in that movie, in The Big Sick, they did a really good job of making the stand-up real, feel real. It's a very hard thing to do, as we know, in anything, on film, on TV. Mm-hmm. It's really hard to do.
Many people have failed.
Yeah. And so...
Here's how they normally fail.
Yeah.
They don't just shoot a stand-up night. Like it's like sports.
Yeah. They do a scripted scene.
They do a scripted scene and they try to recreate stand up.
Yeah.
And what you should do with sports and stand up
is let it play for real.
Shoot it.
Yeah.
We're doing a stand up night, shoot the whole 2-hour show.
And pull the best 2 minutes
and
out of it.
Exactly.
It's so funny.
And Kumail said that. They had like, you know, it was half empty. On our podcast, we had just had him on ours and he said, look, it wasn't a full room.
We all were doing our stand-up, and I remember recognized some of those bits and stuff that he was doing, and he's like, yeah, sometimes we didn't get all the laughs, and we shot that, which it's not always going to be
good. Yeah, you never, like, people don't crush.
Like, there's a moment in, I just recently watched Fast Times at Ridgemont High with friends of ours, the father, you know, of a daughter who is best.
Did you forget how to talk, Randy?
The guy's from England and never saw it and culturally didn't understand it, but really wanted to see it just to know kind of what
Fast Times was.
Yeah. And so we watched it and there is a scene, very specifically, the Washington football playing scene. There's a moment where I don't know if Heckerling did this on purpose, but they come in and the game is happening and they just kind of pan across the cheerleaders. And it's very real. It feels like that came from a high school football game, very much speaking to what you just said. And I was like, oh, yeah, this feels so real. While some of the football shots were not, and that was a little bit staged.
Or like in Dazed and Confused, when Linklater included after the baseball game the high five line. Good game. Good game. Good game.
So you know it was like.
You know what's about to come around the corner. What's happening is that they're going to get their asses paddled like doom is like hanging over their heads.
And they still have to do this thing that we all did when we played sports. Good game, good game, good game, good game. And Linklater said he fought the studio in order to be able to shoot that. They were like, let's cut it. It's done. We don't need it. And he's like, no, no, no.
That's part of their slicing the life. You got to put that in.
Mm-hmm. Right.
And it's great. And those are the moments when you're like, you get it. Someone else was telling us about.
Those are the moments Linklater does best, too. Yeah. Those are the ones that you would not cut out.
Yeah. And those are like his signature things. Where
someone was telling us about The Fan. Was it The Fan?
Oh, yeah. Someone said in The Fan, which was directed, I believe, by a British director.
Also a baseball movie?
Baseball movie where Robert De Niro was a crazy fan of Wesley Snipes.
It's like raining. Right. It's pouring down rain. And
which, by the way, if it's pouring down rain and the field condition, they would like.
Baseball's
do a rain
over.
Delay.
They would call it immediately.
Yeah. So that's one. Number two, players were coming out of the dugout and just going straight up to the batter's box to hit. No one was going to an on-deck circle, which is what they all do at every level as you go up.
Seems tiny.
Yeah.
It's, oh, God, I could go on this forever. Yeah. Like, any given Sunday made me, I was screaming at the screen.
Yeah, it took place on a Monday.
Yeah.
I can't believe they did that. I mean, that was their biggest mistake. I'm like, you guys, what are you calling?
Or if you do it, just take the calendar down from the back.
Yeah. Oh. So let's, speaking of realism in films, let's get into Dunkirk. Now, here's the thing. I know you saw it, but I want, oh, go ahead.
Jason Sklar, ladies and gentlemen. Godspeed.
Godspeed.
Thank you, Jason.
So I've never seen you guys not together. This is weird for me.
No, it's all good. Just get rid of that weight.
You feel feeling better.
I'm great.
You lost like an appendage.
I'm loosey-goosey. You're going to see me in ways that you've never seen me before.
And Aaron's got to adjust the camera. This is crazy.
I know. Thanks, Aaron.
But now, because I really want to hear what you think of this movie to see if your opinion lines up with CJ's, because CJ has a written review of the site on the site right now.
It was... Let me say this. Let me address some of the criticism I've heard about this movie first.
Okay, and it might be from CJ, but go ahead.
I haven't read CJ's review.
Okay.
I heard this because I was down at Comic-Con and heard some people talk about this at Comic-Con. Mm. And
were they cosplaying in Dunkirk uniforms?
No, they were. It was like I was on Douglas Movies with Andy Signor from Screen Junkies,
right.
And so he obviously was talking a lot about what some people have said. Is like, oh, you know. There's not a lot of talking, and it's, you know, there's not a lot of character development, and, you know, it's decent.
Well,
and
there isn't in war.
No, and that's the thing. Talking. So, exactly. It's movies real straightforward, man. If they're surrounded by the Germans.
Right, right.
You're going to die.
From the British perspective.
From the British perspective. You need to
it's
get
a
the,
rescue mission. The movie is a rescue
you
mission.
You
got
to get the
right?
fuck off the island.
That's right.
Or the, not the island,
or
but the.
Just
but,
out of the area.
Out of the area. You got to get back to England.
To the island. I mean,
to the island.
So they, and correct me if I'm wrong, they get Wonder Woman to just run
she
across
comes
and
in.
She takes the bullets
on
and
her
then
invisible
right
jet.
On her thing and just zips away and like destroys everybody and then
Chris
they move forward.
Chris Pine is fantastic.
Okay,
he's an American. So an American
good.
Saves them.
Great.
No, but this movie is. I thought it was fantastic, and knowing those criticisms, I was like, wow, these whoever said that missed the whole point of this, because it Nolan did a fantastic job of boiling this down to just raw survival.
Were you riveted the whole time?
Yes. The thing I will say, the opening, we talked about this having watched the trailer, you know, we were talking about because the opening battle scene in Saving Private Ryan was very groundbreaking when that came out almost 20 years ago.
Right. Now, is this the Christopher Nolan movie we need or deserve?
Depends from
both.
My perspective.
Yeah. So the opening, the some of the battle footage is amazing.
Mm-hmm.
There's a lot of aerial fighting because you're seeing them.
The dogfights.
The dogfights in the air with Tom Hardy. And then you're seeing stuff in the sea. And then there's... one-on-one trying to a lot of it's at sea. A lot of them are trying to get on and off boats and the British Navy can't come rescue them because it's too shallow and they don't want to lose boats for the next battle. So they then send what actually happened is then they put out the call and just civilians got on their boats from England, came over the English Channel and rescued a bunch of people.
So it was civilian boats.
Yeah, it's civilian boats. But there's also there's I mean it's here's what I'll say. It's like the opening battle of the D-Day battle of Saving Private Ryan, but for 2 hours. It's that intense.
Wow.
I left.
Wow. Was
like,
it that graphic, too?
Yeah. I mean, it's, and it was.
How about the comedy in there?
It was hilarious. Okay,
good to know. Good to
Tom
know.
Tom Hardy was like, take control, Dunkirk. It was gripping.
And it was really disturbing. Like, when you talk about that opening sequence of Saving Private Ryan, it was really disturbing.
I mean, it tried to show war as they're like, as this realism. Is exactly, yeah. You know, we're not glamorizing this, and this is how gratuitous, we're gonna make gratuitous it actually is.
Yeah, we're going to make you feel like you're on that beach.
Well, Graham, you have been to Afghanistan, you've been to Iraq, you have been to Detroit. I mean, you've been to all the war-torn areas of our world.
Columbus, Ohio.
Yeah, Columbus, Ohio. But you have been amongst soldiers, and I think there is this idea of just get me off the island and just survival that I think a lot of people don't fully understand.
And that's what I loved about this movie, too, is so often, and obviously the sort of John Wayne-ish World War II movies, but up to today, you know, soldiers are depicted often as, you know, super heroic and stuff. And not that they're not. This isn't a slam on them. But more often than not, they take out the just raw human fear that happens. In this movie, you had some young guys that were like, I just want to get the fuck out of here.
Mm-hmm.
And
well, he deliberately cast unknowns for the soldiers.
Wow.
For that very reason. He's like, you know, it's because they're young and unknown. I want them to be young and unknown actors.
He did such a great job of just showing the sort of faceless young masses that had to, especially World War II. So you had millions of people on all sides fighting. And most of them were just 19, 20, 21-year-old kids who were like, guess what? There's a big war. You're in. Mm. And
whether you want to or not.
Whether you want to or not. And, you know, this is pre, like, Vietnam and stuff like that where, like, protesting. People have, just so you know, people have protested every single war that's ever happened and said there's always been people protested World War II and said, why are we killing? War is awful.
Mm-hmm.
So, but this, like, wholesale cultural, I don't want to go to war, didn't really exist.
And this film takes place in a period before the U.S. got into World War II, right?
So, and so the movie's told from three points of view. It's on the beach with the infantry evacuated by the Navy and then in the air. And, and here's the other thing, too. Tom, you know, he casts all these no-names, so there's just these masses of kids.
Right.
The opening battle scene is this kid just in this harrowing. And he I saw it in IMAX at the Chinese theaters.
Nice. Oh wow!
So
it's pronounced the Oriental Theater.
It's the Asian American theater. And so
was it 3D?
No. I don't think that this movie isn't out in 3D. But I would recommend seeing it on the big screen. And if you can see it in IMAX, I would, because Christopher Nolan's film work and his shot composition is amazing, and the battle. He makes it loud.
Are you amazed that, okay, this is a story told from the British perspective before the U.S. got into this war? Obviously, it's a war that we got into. Are you surprised, either of you, both of you guys, how well that movie is doing? Or do you think it's not doing well, but just that there'd be interest on the U.S. side? I mean, we're now in a heavy period of isolationism where it's like, we don't give a shit about what's going on with you, but that this is...
Well, I think Christopher Nolan's name is something that has also helped driving the film because he, you know, his films have been very well received and he's got fans as a director where I think, and I myself included, I'll see whatever he makes.
Yeah, you're like, what is this? This is a Christopher Nolan film.
Right.
This is his interpretation of these events.
I want to see it regardless of what the subject matter. I want to see his perspective.
Yep. The teaser trailer that came out last fall, the 60-second teaser trailer, Christopher Nolan, Dunkirk, the teaser trailer, I was like, I'm in. I don't need to see anything more.
Yeah.
And
I think a lot of people are that way.
You know, he had a $100 million budget. It's done over 50
he
million.
He made 100 worldwide just in the first weekend.
And when you see those trailers too, his name comes up first.
Yeah.
You know, so
well,
you know.
It's so funny because in the promotion of it, in the lead up, I've seen a lot of face interviews of him and you know what I mean? Like he's as important of a piece in this thing as anybody else.
He's the reason to see it because not to take anything away from Tom Hardy. Tom Hardy
he's
is
got, in, like 10 lines in the movie, something
he's
like
in a
that.
Face. He, you know, they have those air masks.
Yeah.
You barely see his face through the whole.
He basically took the mask from
Mad Max.
Yeah, from Mad Max.
From Mad Max.
Just no teeth on the outside of it.
Yeah, yeah. He's like, he only performs in masks from now on.
And he'll only do, like, if you added up all the lines in both of those movies that he has, it's, like, enough for, like, one scene in Juno.
Yeah. Right. But, I mean, yeah, that's the thing. And that's what was so, and that it is Nolan. You're going to see Christopher Nolan and some really gifted young actors.
Right.
Who should be getting more work from this point
forward. Now, how do you feel about that criticism specifically? Like, because CJ had that criticism in his review as well, where the actual soldiers felt interchangeable. They weren't developed enough as characters. Like, now, how did you feel about that when you were watching
the movie? With all due respect to CJ Jackson, whom I love, and I think he just missed it.
Okay.
It's not, this isn't me like, I'm right, you're wrong. I really think.
Let me ask you this. Not to bring another war movie in, but the most recent Star Wars movie where it was basically they said, oh, let's take the one line from the original Star Wars of a lot of people died in order for you to get this message and made a whole movie about that. So all these characters coming up that aren't some of them not really developed at all. And you're like, why should I care? Because I had that feeling really in that one. Mm-hmm. I did not connect with that movie. I understand it. I understand where it fits in it. I get that. But I was like, man, why should I give a shit about these people?
I see that with Rogue One.
Mm-hmm.
I think this is separate. And here's why is because...
No lightsabers.
Yeah, there's no lightsabers. But like, this really happened. Mm-hmm. So I have yet, me personally, I haven't seen, I've known about this historically, Dunkirk, mm-hmm. but I haven't seen the telling of this story.
Right.
And also, for me, Christopher Nolan said, I want to show you what war is. And, like, if we had flashbacks to him growing up or we learned his character or his mom or, oh, he's got to get back to his young girlfriend, that's all – it's all understood. Like, I would have been like, oh, man, why are we wasting time with this? Because it's real boiled down. You got to get home. And back home – everyone's got their own specific what you need, what's back home, kids, wife, mom, whatever. Right. But just get back home. This is terrifying. This is real war. This is what happened. This was, the whole world was at war.
Did you hate the Germans? Like, what were your, like, did you develop a sense of anger towards the other side?
Hitler got him out of the Depression. I think he did some good work. So yeah. I feel...
did anybody... I'm saying, like, were you... I mean, did they build them more or less
again,
than what they were?
Again, this, is, to me, is a testament to Nolan. Now, maybe you might just say, I need more out of my movies, so what didn't do enough for me. But to me, the testament of Nolan was the Germans were just over there.
Yeah.
Right.
The bullets would come. Planes would come from the sky. We didn't meet the Germans. We didn't see their
faces. Were there any scenes of somebody going, papers, please?
No, there was none of that. There was no, you never saw any of the Germans. It's also in like Letters from Iwo Jima and how, you know, Clint Eastwood just showed the Japanese military and the Americans we barely saw or knew anything about them. It was really from, if you're a soldier on that beach at Dunkirk, you're not meeting any Germans. Right. You know they're coming. The planes would come from above and you'd hear that, and you'd just be fucking, that sound was terrifying. Yeah. So he really, Nolan, just put you were in the place.
With them.
Of the British soldiers.
The way Spielberg did.
Yes. Mm-hmm. And so you didn't, there was,
so this will draw a ton of Saving Private Ryan comparisons or right. like this is that for this generation. You're going to hear that a lot.
I think so. And
not a bad thing.
That movie was a
movie that I feel like there aren't a lot of people walking around going, didn't like it.
Right. I think
it's
what
nothing it, what I expected.
But what it might do, though, is people might go, yeah, but in Saving Private Ryan, we got to meet everybody. We got to know about him. Tom Hanks was the teacher, and all those scenes are great.
Well, it's a different type of movie.
It's a different type of movie. And this was like...
So it's, to me, it seems like Saving Private Ryan more about war in depicting it through this thing. And this is more about this battle and this moment, and we're going to depict this moment. We are... Saving Private Ryan was like, this is what the people who have to go to war have to then go through on the battlefield.
This is the story of these specific soldiers.
And these specific soldiers are caricatures of the American GIs that fought in this war.
Right.
So you got to kind of see how that war, you know, was a different era.
Like that scene when Tom Hanks, everybody asks, well, what did you do before the war? I was a teacher.
Yeah.
You know, and they have those discussions.
And every man I kill makes me feel like I'm further from home.
Right.
You know? And so there's lines like that. This is just the raw fear, survival.
Here.
I mean, on the movie
poster,
it
felt like scorched earth the entire time
it's
you were there.
Fucking,
okay.
Yeah.
All right.
On the movie poster, it says survival is victory. And you see guys do selfish, scared things. You see them crack a little bit. Mm. And that's like because
that happened.
That's what went down. Everybody wasn't like, we got to go fight the Jerrys. Guys were like, this is fuck. I want to get the fuck out of here.
It's like guys throwing up before the beach in Normandy.
And having read a lot of history about World War II, when I read like serious historians, they talk about, I mean, there were guys like trying to get out of it. There were guys faking getting injured to get the fuck out of there. Everyone wasn't just fucking John Wayne charging up the hill.
No, and even if you were, you came back a different person.
Yeah.
You came back changed. Our great uncle was a fighter pilot in World War II, and he cracked up. I mean, and when he came back, he like literally had a mental breakdown.
Well, they didn't know what it was. They didn't call it PTSD.
No.
One guy is reacting a certain way in the movie, and Mark Rylance, who also was, he's the only other name actor.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. But he's one of the civilians. So it's sort of.
Yeah, it's Kenneth Branagh, Tom Hardy, and Mark Rylance.
That's it.
And Kenneth Branagh was playing Woody Allen.
Yeah,
that's unbelievable.
And he was like, there's Germans over there. I feel uncomfortable.
It's like the Nuremberg trials.
It's like, what am I? Germans over there.
But it was well cast. Kenneth Branagh plays an English military officer, so you should have a well-known English A-list actor playing that, and then a bunch of faceless kids.
Totally.
Really? So Keanu Reeves could have
Keanu Reeves.
So yeah, it's a really fantastic film, and I highly recommend it. And CJ, I think you just missed it.
Mm-hmm. Good. Hey, I like it when people disagree. To me, that's awesome. That's
why people go to the site. A lot of times we have different opinions and reviews on the website.
Which is great.
I think it's a Nolan masterpiece, quite honestly.
Really?
Yeah.
Okay. All right. Good enough. So the movie I saw, too, I saw Teen Titans, The Judas Contract. Now, this is an on-demand movie. This is part of the DC animated universe, the ones that they put out.
This is based on a real battle as well.
It's also based on a real battle, yes.
The Judas Contract.
It is...
And the Judas Contract was all taken care of on LegalZoom.
It was all taken care of.
Which is a sponsor.
An animated version, yes.
LegalZoom.
So basically this is a Teen Titans story, which is interesting. It was an odd choice because they showed in one movie what they showed in the Teen Titans show that happened throughout an entire season, where one Titan is actually a sleeper agent, goes rogue, and turns against the Titans. So... these movies are definitely hit and miss, these DC animated movies. Some of them are fantastic. This one, however, is a miss. It's a PG-13, but it's Teen Titans, so it skews younger. Mm. So you see the heroes that are younger, but also you have those, now we need a beheading to make sure we get that PG-13 rating.
Right.
And then you have like all the... the quirky, the jokes and Beast Boy being funny, and it falls flat because, you're trying to make it funny, but now you're also trying to make it PG-13 and make sure it's for a more adult audience.
Would they have been better off just leaving it at PG and not going for the more? It wouldn't change the movie in any way.
No, it didn't serve because they've already shown the story in a better way when they show the Teen Titans TV show. So, and Teen Titans have gone through many iterations. They had the regular TV show. They have the one right now called Teen Titans Go, which is just a comedy.
My kids watch
show.
It.
Yeah,
yep.
And it's hilarious.
Yeah.
So this was like, an adult version of one of those stories, but it just didn't work. And then there was this weird forced part where Beast Boy gets to be a guest on Kevin Smith's podcast.
What?
So you have an animated Kevin Smith interviewing Beast Boy. So another
that
thing,
I think,
like,
is kind of cool.
Yeah,
I'm sorry. I think that's kind of fun.
How did they draw his hockey jersey?
It felt, it, then I'm like, well, now it feels like a Scooby-Doo episode where they just, you know, they were
they solve
would,
a murder.
Yeah, yeah, where they would just they're draw both? In celebrities.
Would have gotten away with it if it weren't for you, Madeline Kidds.
So
Madeline
it really, it really was all over the map. It was not the best DC animated film.
But you have to, on some level, as podcast. As people who do a podcast, and we are too, have to love that the idea of somebody doing a podcast making its way into a movie
is fantastic.
Is kind of cool. That means it's like rising
not
up
just
into
a
the,
movie, an animated movie.
An animated
which means
movie.
Kevin Smith was drawn with his jersey on, you know, interviewing
Kevin
Beast
Smith.
Boy.
Did he do the
he
movie?
Did the he did the voice, yeah.
But he didn't do the movie. That's not
no,
I mean, that's amazing.
Yeah.
I bet he knew the people who did the movie and they called him.
Yeah,
like,
he's a
hey,
huge comic book fan.
Of course.
I'm sure it was one phone call. Yeah, of course I'll do it.
Yeah, that's amazing.
Comedy Boomers is available to be animated.
For any animated
movies.
So, but it was definitely a weird addition to the actual movie, even though it was fun to see a podcast actually get in a film. Because one of the things, too, with these movies is they're shorter. They're generally not, you know, they only have like 70, 80 minutes because animation is expensive.
Right.
And they're like, well, maybe tell a longer story than trying to fit Kevin Smith's podcast into it.
Unless they were like, we can animate this really easily.
Right?
Well, they also know we're going to get a lot of great press coming off it. You
exactly.
Know?
Yeah. Well, you think he's not going to promote
or
it,
or his
course.
Support. Yeah, his support will be good.
So
it's
it was
the same
definitely...
director that did Batman the Killing Joke and a bunch of other
animated.
They use a lot of the same people on these. Sometimes they're just – and, you know, one of the trivia that I was reading about it, too, is that this was one of the – when they first started doing the DC animated movies, this was one of the first ones they wanted to do, and they shelved it. Thinking, maybe we won't do this one. So this is one they kind of had on the shelf for a while that they pulled out and decided to do. So it's okay. I mean, if you're a Teen Titans fan, there was another Teen Titans movie that came out, Teen Titans versus Justice League, which was really good. So that one, I would say, I recommend watching that one over this one.
All right. So Randy, what kind of business have you, I know you got kids, and what kind of movies have you seen recently?
It's hard. I went out and saw The Big Sick, which we talked about, which I saw, you know, in anticipation of Kumail coming on our podcast. I saw it, and I loved it. I mean, I loved it for all the reasons we talked about before. I particularly loved Ray Romano's performance
in it. That's what I keep hearing.
Right, every single thing coming out of his mouth made me laugh. Like, just... Mm-hmm. He'd just be drinking a glass of water and be like, water tastes different here than in Chicago. I mean, in Chicago than in New York. I started laughing. Like, no matter what he said, I just thought it was a great performance. I've always loved him as a stand-up. Loved him and loved him in Everybody Loves Raymond as a four-camera, you know, sitcom, you know, that sort of a star. But I think he really, and maybe it was his turn on Parenthood and whatnot and just getting able to sort of flex those acting muscles or go in that direction. He was amazing. I mean, I actually thought he outshone Holly Hunter, and I like Holly Hunter a lot.
Right. Mm-hmm.
Big fan of hers. I think he outshone her in this. And I think Kumail's family was great. The people they had to play his family. It just was a great movie. And I kept on thinking, I'm like, well, why is this different than Juno? Why is this different, any different than Little Miss Sunshine? Like, this movie could be, because it deals with health stuff and it deals with race and
interfaith
marriage. Yeah, and just like making those decisions and growing up and whatnot. To me, I thought it was the best romantic comedy since 500 Days of Summer.
Oh, okay? Nice.
Okay.
And I started watching it and started thinking about it, and I was like, well, why shouldn't this be up like Juno won for best screenplay? Why couldn't this be up for best screenplay? Mm-hmm. And with sort of the Oscar list somewhat expanding, it might have a shot. Like, we might see one of our friends' movies, and he might be going to the Oscars as a result of this. Now, will he be up for best actor? Probably not. Will Ray Romano be up for best supporting actor? Maybe.
Right.
Maybe, kind of like Arkin in, you know.
Does Michael Showalter, who directed it, does he?
First of all, I saw my Hello, My Name's Doris, and I loved it. Loved it. I mean, I'm such a fan of Showalter's. We've worked with him. He was on our Apartment 2F show back in New York. He played Ron Parker in Cheap Seats without Ron Parker. Our ESPN show, he played like the main guy in the show. And
I liked Hello, My
Name
is Doris. I saw it. I liked that movie.
I thought that movie was great. I'm a big Max Greenfield fan. And I mean, I think he did a great job with that movie, and I thought this built upon that. And he kind of just got out of the way and let the movie happen. He wasn't trying too much crazy stuff, although he did do some really unique and interesting things, and I thought it was shot very beautifully and tastefully, and it didn't get in the way of telling the story. It actually made the story better. So I think, will he be? I don't know if that movie can make it that far, but I do think it would be considered for best
screenplay.
Right.
And maybe Ray Romano goes up for best supporting
actor.
Cool.
I mean, that's, you know.
Because the movie's going to make, right now it's like at $25 million, I want to say, okay, maybe a little bit more over the course. And it started out in five theaters. I mean, what I love about it is kind of the story of the way movies would get released in the 70s. Starts out in five theaters. And remember, if you got that one great review from that woman from like the Village Voice, I forgot the woman's name. I am forgetting her name right now. But like, if she gave you a good review, boom, you were now wide.
Yeah,
like,
Paula
Kael. That's right.
Thank you, Aaron.
So you got a Paula Kael, great Paula
Kael. Elvis Mitchell review.
Right. Mm-hmm. So,
but this is the new. I mean, the new era is the social media buzz.
So I'm like, well, wait a minute now. Hold on a second. Maybe okay. So starts in five theaters, does really well per theater, gets a good per theater. You know,
yeah, that never happens anymore because the
and it boomed out to like 325 theaters the second weekend. And then it wound up making a lot of money, and then they expanded to 3,000.
Because the rollouts are so specific, and the movie theaters are so already booked with like the big blockbusters and
that's
stuff.
That's it, so, especially
a
in the
smaller
summer.
Movie doesn't have that room a lot of times to grow and find its audience. So,
and I know it's going to be hard for you guys to understand this, but I'm sure there are a lot of people out there who don't want to see the next superhero movie. They're just
I don't know what you're talking about.
I know what
about.
I'm saying. Like, there are people out there who are like, fuck it. I can't. I don't know the difference between this and that.
There
and
is counter programming.
So it's, this is a bit of a counter program for those people who are like, it's not my bag. Now, I took my girls to see Wonder Woman. Our whole family, we saw Wonder Woman like 2 weeks ago.
Right.
So a couple weeks after
fun time
the
at the movies. Family time at the movies.
And for young girls who were like, wow, powerful
woman.
Yeah,
my daughter loved it.
I loved it for the unapologetic, she's a hero. She's a hero. We're not trying to be like, yeah, but, you know, like everybody's kind of bending to make her seem better than she is, which sometimes it kind of does that. But she also was in a world where everyone's like, yeah, she's a hero. And the Amazon, that whole, you know, culture and whatnot, where they're just badasses and they're cool. It's great for, I think, a 10-year-old and a 12-year-old, my two daughters, to see that and be like, yeah, you can do whatever you want.
Well, the thing I want to, and then we'll move on, but I do want to go and just that is a great point about the counter programming. And every summer, it can happen. You'll have movies like 500 Days of Summer or St. Vincent or something like that. That's like for people who are like, I don't want to see another blockbuster $150 million movie. It's great that these movies come in. And what my hope is because this started out small and has grown, that I hope people start, and Amazon and people like that go, hey, let's carve out some space. So that these little...
Let's make a $5 million movie that could potentially... I mean, look, when all is said and done, and if this does get some Oscar buzz...
And give it a theatrical release.
That's right. If this does get Oscar buzz, okay? Because people still enjoy going to the movies.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
Okay? My mom in St. Louis went to go see... I was like, you got to go see The Big Sick. Just do it to support our friends and, you know, just do it because you... you know, and she was like, it was packed. I couldn't believe it. She went to, like, the cool sort of artsy cinema in St. Louis, and it was totally packed. And she said it was a really great experience. She had a great time watching it. And I said, this is what we all have to support.
Right.
We have to support movies like this because the blockbusters are going to keep coming out. They have to.
Sure.
They're going to do fine.
They're going to do great.
Right.
Because
mostly.
A couple of them are not going to do well.
Yes, and they shouldn't.
Well, it's also like an animated movie that doesn't do well. You know, you're like, oh, the story wasn't good. You know, like, because it's got to get through that first wave in order to then really...
Crest.
That's it.
Yep. So now I saw War of the Planet of the Apes. Now, I wanted to mention this because I saw it. I enjoyed it. And it really did feel like a trilogy. Like when you
just so everybody knows, we are going to do a War for the Planet of the Apes spoiler app.
Spoiler.
So we'll get into the details on that.
Yeah, I don't want to get into too many details before the spoiler app. But one thing which I found fascinating is that how many times are we going to remake Apocalypse Now with apes?
Yeah.
This is... It's like this was like
so
it
Emilio
really
Estevez
like,
starred.
Yeah, yeah. It was like, you know, taken right. There was scenes like this is right out of like Going Up the River, Colonel Kurtz. This is but with apes, and then but then Skull Island was Apocalypse Now with a giant ape. So it's weird that filmmakers are going back to this one classic movie specifically to pull from for their ape movies.
Yeah, yeah.
It's a very specific thing, which I find very interesting. So, but we'll go more into it.
It got actually, it got like 87 on Metacritic, I was looking, or 86 or 87 on Metacritic.
You know, which... I really enjoyed the movie. I thought it really had some cool things. There were so many Easter eggs for Planet of the Apes fans that yeah. I know Matt Weinhold is going to go into mm-hmm. with us.
Great.
But there was also like some really cool, you can't really call it you can kind of call it foreshadowing because it leads up to the movies from the 70s. Like they were trying to explain things that happened in that movie, these movies, which I thought was kind of cool.
It's like the reason why I love Better Call Saul.
Yeah.
It's like you're just like, or the reason why I loved in a funny way the series on Netflix of Wet Hot American Summer. We talk about Showalter.
Right. Mm-hmm.
They were like every non sequitur that just seemed like a little, we're going to now give backstory to.
Yeah.
And I was like, mm-hmm. that backing the truck into the 70s movies of the Planet of the Apes. Right. That to me, I think, is really cool, and those are the fun. Yeah. They do it in Star Wars too, but you
for
know
sure.
what I mean.
Yeah, because I love that. I love that. Like, oh, that's why that dude's that way.
Yeah,
right.
You know?
Right.
Oh my God, it's great that they put that thought in. Really reward them for that thought.
Yeah, it was cool. So, all right, let's take care of some business.
Let's take care of some business.
Let's do our Patreon ads. We have Mike Valdez at whoismikevaldez.com. Check out his music and his comedy there. And also Frightfully Uninformed. It's the podcast that watches mostly classic horror movies to figure out horror movie fandom. Frightfullyuninformed.com. Those are our two Patreon ad
So, guys, for $50 a month at the Patreon, we will read your website or business or whatever you want to promote. It's a nice little effective marketing.
And it is a limited tier. We only go to 10.
Mm-hmm.
So...
But we're not stupid. So, we'd go to more.
Yeah. All right. If you're the 11th one and email us, we might fit you.
We fit you.
We'll figure out a way.
Yeah. It's weird how you could change stuff on Patreon.
And everybody listening, go to these websites. whoismikevaldez.com and frightfullyuninformed.com, and that's another way to support the show.
Absolutely, a free way.
See what they got going on.
So, and let's talk about some trailers. Now since we were at Comic-Con.
Yes.
We did, of course, Rick Meyers' Kung Fu Movie Extravaganza.
We did that, which was a blast. We also did the hotel room episode with Rick Meyers and Neil T.
That did not get lost.
It did not get lost. It dropped it. It's out there. It's
dropped it like it was lukewarm.
Oh,
yes.
Hot. That panel was cool.
It was really fun.
You dropped it like a DoubleTree cookie.
Yes.
They give it to you. It's kind of hot there, right? That's going to be my new thing.
I dropped
like a DoubleTree cookie.
Complimentary bottled water for Hilton Gold members.
So now after Comic-Con, as you know, all of the big comic book movies drop their trailers in sci-fi and fantasy
trailers.
So Justice League. Now, I think we can thank Joss Whedon for a better Justice League trailer. I'm getting a little more hopeful of this, especially when I hear how many reshoots that are happening with this movie.
$20 million, right?
It's something unheard of. Yeah. Whereas Joss Whedon is really trying to not just do reshoots, but remake the film.
Right.
So I don't know how much damage has already been done to this film.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know if Joss Whedon can save it, but we'll see. I'm a little more hopeful now that I saw this trailer, and I know he's kind of in charge of reworking the film.
Randy, what did you think of that trailer?
I was, because I'm not as inside baseball as most folks on everything that's going on, I was a little confused, you know, about like, all right, Superman died in quote-unquote comic book sense, so did he really die? We don't know, but he died.
Chances are he'll be back.
But he died, and then the people who got the beings or the people that got him need to pay. Who is it? It's a little, for me, it was hard to, for someone on the, I'll say this, okay, let me put it this way. For someone on the outside looking in, it's a little hard to like figure out a way in.
Did you watch this? Did it make you like, oh, I got to check this out to know what this is? Or were you like,
You're like, I recognize Batman.
I recognize Batman. I recognize Wonder Woman. I recognize, you know, I'm in The Flash. And then I was like, well, okay, what is this? And where is this movie going to sit? Where is this movie going to sit in its pocket, so to speak? Mm-hmm. And, you know, I guess what I loved about a movie like Wonder Woman is there's one superhero. You have one...
Right.
person's story kind of being told and the conflicts that that person has. My fear is with so many, how are you going to – how deep can you go into
it? It also shows you how Hollywood is a closed system. It's like, well, how do we fix these and make it more like the Avengers? Get the guy who did the Avengers. Mm-hmm. Like, there's no other filmmakers in mm-hmm. Hollywood. Mm-hmm. Like, literally, it's like, all right, well, he's the only guy we can get.
I would love to see a different take on someone, a different take, or someone applying their style that maybe doesn't come from that world to it.
More than four people making blockbuster movies in Hollywood, yes.
That would be a nice, that would be a nice thing. Or just at one point, there's like a wheel, a giant wheel, yes. and you rotate it. And you're like, so Michael Bay, you think you're setting up for the next Transformers, and boom, Justice League. So it's just like 12 times more the explosions.
Yeah.
And they do a couple like, of fan boats. Why are there fan boats?
Yeah. And like an NFL draft, they just spin the big wheel.
Spin the big wheel. This is who you're going to get. That would be.
Now it's a football movie.
It's any given Monday.
Nice. I'll see that. And then also the Thor Ragnarok trailer came out. Yes. I'm fired up for this movie.
It looks fun. I'm fired up. I'll tell you, Kate Blanchett, watching her chew up the scenery really entertains me. She's really. She never walks through a role. She never phones it in. And, you know, playing the goddess of death. I mean, you could tell.
She's amazing.
She's having a ball. She's having a blast.
And there are those handful of actors and actresses where you're just like, I would watch you do anything. Mm-hmm. I would literally. Mm-hmm. Because you will figure out a way to put your own stamp on it, but also care about it enough to put it all in there, you know?
I think it'll be a really fun film for sure.
All right, coming out on DVD.
Okay, The Boss Baby.
Watched that with my kids the other night.
Now, I got to ask you, this is one of the movies that even my kids were like, nah, I don't know.
Parts of it were kind of, I don't know. It was not Inside Out. I mean, I think it's so hard to make that great animated, you know, right. But then sometimes I fall in a different line than my kids. Like, my kids love Trolls more than anything. And I would say the animation in Trolls, the sort of scrapbook element animation was remarkable and beautiful.
Well,
to watch.
This is where we get into the difference between a family movie and a kid's movie.
Right.
Trolls was a kid's movie.
Right.
You know, the adults suffer through it instead of enjoying it with the kids.
Right.
Whereas Inside Out or Up or, you know, a lot of the Pixar movies are made for everyone.
Well, because they spend like 4 years on the story.
Right.
And
yeah.
then they work through it because they're.
A good kind of litmus test is, are there people without kids going to see this animated film?
So that's a great litmus test. However, you almost don't need it because the truth of the matter is it's almost like Pixar, to put it in a sports analogy, like a catcher who is practicing throwing down to second base, the good ones will practice throwing into center field. Because if you can throw the ball from the catcher, from behind home plate all the way to the center fielder, that means when someone's stealing second base, you can just do it right there. It means you have to go the extra mile to make a movie that adults who are taking their kids to go see. You got to throw it into center field.
Right.
Which is what those movies do. But truthfully, you don't have to. Because if you're 7, 8, 9, 10-year-old kid.
You get the parent ticket anyway.
You get the parent. It's the most genius thing ever.
Yes.
So the two kids who want to go, equal, and then you add one or two other people who are going to go. That's why they always make so much money.
Because you're always getting an extra couple of tickets.
We always talk about that. Yeah, the economics of you know,
it's
a
genius
kid's
why
movie.
Those things are so unbelievable.
It's never one ticket. It's usually four.
My kids liked Boss Baby because, you know, I mean, it felt like a little bit of like a late night infomercial in that, you know, they tell you all these problems like, you know, you have all these problems with your gutters. And I'm like, yeah, I guess there are problems with my gutters. And then it's like, you know, everything feels like it's a manufacturer. Like someone is just dying because all their Tupperware is falling all around them. I'm like, yeah, I think I have too much Tupperware, but is it a problem?
Right.
So I felt like it was a very much a manufactured problem that they then had to, you know, puppies. And
garden hose murdering
what did
you?
What did your kids think of the next movie on the list, Ghost in the Shell?
The Scarlett Johansson whitewash film?
They did not see that one.
Yeah.
They did not see Ghost in the Shell. Should they have?
No. No, I don't think anyone should have.
I mean, I love Scarlett Johansson. So. I mean, I flat out love her.
I don't know why she keeps doing these types of movies.
Because she probably needs money. I mean, to me, I think Scarlett Johansson is, this is how good of an actor Scarlett Johansson is. I felt her presence so deeply in the movie Her, and I never saw her face.
Right.
And I'm like, that is a very difficult thing to do. And I love that movie. And I'll say that movie more than any movie I think about a lot of times when I just see like how technology is advancing. And I think to myself, that is a movie. That and Idiocracy. And they're both movies about the future. But obviously, with what's going on currently with our government and whatnot,
satire's become real.
Well, that I mean, I just in my brain, I think about those. That's when I think a movie has really done its work.
Think about it afterwards, for sure.
And even like months or a year afterwards, something gets you.
Ghost in the Shell is this weird thing where it's like, well, fans of the anime aren't going to go see it because you put Scarlett Johansson in it, and also the anime is much better. Like what they tried to do is make live-action versions of all the anime characters, which never works because then everybody looks weird because they're drawn to be anime characters. Mm-hmm. And then you have people who aren't familiar with it just looking at it and going, what is this? Why would I want to? Is this Blade Runner?
Yeah.
It did not do well.
Right.
It was $110 million budget. It did maybe 40 over.
Yeah. And it was just one of those head-scratchers of like, why would you make this movie?
What's so, Gifted?
Now, Gifted.
I wanted to see that. This was a limited release. It was Chris Evans and this adorable little girl. She's a gifted kid, and he has to take care of her, and he's trying to. It looked like an interesting film. It looked like something that you know.
How'd it do?
It didn't do well.
Right.
Oh no, actually, it's made $25 million.
Was the budget?
The budget was $7 million.
That's a quiet success.
Yes.
Like every studio will say that no one will jump up and down because it wasn't like the $5 million movie that's $100 million. But they will say this means we get to keep the level of Christmas party we had last year.
Yeah. Right. Yeah, it's a movie that I miss, but I definitely want to see it. It's out on DVD.
I'll get it for you as a gift.
Yeah.
I don't get it.
So. And on the site Spotlight, we already discussed it. I want to talk about CJ's Dunkirk review. Also, CJ has a review of War for the Planet of the Apes
and I
had the exact same reaction as far as like the Apocalypse Now, the way they used it. And then also premiering this week, we have the Emoji Movie.
Okay, so now I have a personal connection to this movie. So I'm in because my friend wrote it.
Oh, okay.
So in my heart of hearts, I want it to be, and we know some people who are doing voices in it.
Sure.
I want it to be a huge success. So I feel like, unlike the Trump administration, I'm going to recuse myself from this discussion because I'm sure. So I want it to be successful because I want my friend
to do well,
and I want it to just be a big honking success for him.
This goes back to our discussion before. My kids want to see this movie.
So, same with mine.
So here's the thing. Whether you and I want to see it or we're going to enjoy it or not, we're going to be paying for it.
T.J. Miller is going to do a few things that will make you laugh.
Yes.
I guarantee there'll be things that do it.
Right.
And to me, I have to.
So there's four tickets coming regardless.
Same with me. And I'm going to support him because I love Eric Siegel. But I mean,
especially the way our kids are on their devices so much is like the Emoji Movie. It's one of those movies that was created in a marketing department that will just make money.
I hope it does. I really do. And, you know, whatever. It's like, also you want, also the experience of going to the movie with your family and doing that.
Right.
Like, my kids have been watching So You Think You Can Dance. Is that a show that I would be like, I gotta see that. Right. Honey.
I gotta see if they
wake
can
up,
dance.
Wake up. We gotta come down and binge. No, I would never see that. But we all sat around together and we were kind of experiencing it. And like,
we're doing that with American Grit. That's the John Cena show where it's basically Survivor.
Yes, yes, I've seen promos for that.
But way to prepare your family for the apocalypse.
There's some
John
really
Cena.
Good lessons in there. You know,
so I mean,
learned a train to fall into a lake.
So my attitude is like, okay, I'm gonna spin it in a way of like, all right, if you go out with your family,
right,
hopefully people will see this with their kids and have a good time. But it is definitely not a movie that I'm saying like I'm itching to see this movie or see what it's gonna be. I just hope it does well for my friends.
Yeah, you have parent reaction, same as me.
Yeah.
So next movie, Atomic Blonde. I'm excited for this
movie. On a graphic novel.
It's based on a graphic
novel. I like Charlize Theron as a badass.
Yeah.
I love, first of all, the trailer's pretty dope.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
Just the refrigerator ass kicking scene makes me wanna like
and we need more
like
good.
That since William Perry.
Not since William Perry
and dove in the end zone.
We need more good action movies. Fast and the Furious we have, but they're tongue in cheek. Like we like more Mad Max, like more like a movie like this. I'm excited to see.
I love it too. And I guess like the most difficult part is it's almost like trying to make stand up work in a movie is with a female heroine is like okay, if Ronda Rousey went into the UFC ring with John Bones Jones, he would kill her. He would literally kill her. Mm-hmm. He would hit her twice with his elbows in her head, and she would not wake up. She would be dead. So how do you take a female lead and be like, I believe all the fighting, and she's not a superhero. Mm-hmm. I mean, is she a superhero in this?
No.
So like, she's not like a trained assassin spy, right? Mm-hmm. So she's not a superhero. How do you make all of that believable? That like she goes in and kicks everybody's ass, and you're like, well,
and it's like set in the 80s too,
right? Mm-hmm. So I don't know. There's a lot in there that I think is really cool, and I think I feel like they've figured a few things out in this, and I love Charlize Theron, and you want to go back to the right. Mad Max movie.
Yeah.
She exactly. fucking captivated me, that whole movie.
That was her film.
She was awesome.
She because mm-hmm. she was the one who, you know, Thomas Hardy had six lines and no emotion.
Right.
You know what I mean? He was just kind of driving right. the truck forward, literally mm-hmm. and figuratively. She was the one who
grounded amidst, the movie.
That's right. Amidst mm-hmm. all that, had the emotion that pulled you in. So no matter what she does, and by the way, one of my favorite movies she ever did was with our buddy Patton Oswalt, Young Adult.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, my God. She was amazing in that yeah. movie. She was incredible. So I feel like she will take this character and give it some levels and depth mm-hmm. in a way that maybe someone else who's just kind of like an action-y person, in a way that a Ronda Rousey couldn't.
Right.
Because she's like a really good actress as well. So I'm excited to see this. Whether I see this in the theater or whether I see it when it comes out, I am definitely going to see this
yeah,
movie.
I'll see
right.
this.
I'm excited to see it. And the next one, an inconvenient sequel, Truth to Power. This is Al Gore's sequel to An Inconvenient Truth.
More hippie bullshit, guys.
Yeah.
climate change isn't happening.
yeah.
It's a lie from the liberal media.
So, if you want to see what the liberal media looks like in movie form, check it out.
I really do want to see this because I want to know what the hell is going on. But I am looking forward to, and I don't know if you guys heard this, but a prequel coming out, The Convenient Truth.
yes.
That's going to come and kind of back everything into. This is when we all thought the environment was going to be fine.
It's like Planet of the Apes.
Polar bears have enough food.
Yeah.
the ice caps are too big.
You know what I find fascinating about like
more
if you watch
hairspray.
This, if you watch this trailer, you realize that there's some very recent footage of Trump, and so you know. After Trump got elected,
that
there was
like,
some recutting, like, well, we can't release this movie.
That's the beauty of documentaries. And anytime right. I'm watching a documentary,
well, they did that with 13th.
Yeah. Yeah. Mm-hmm. There was a lot of last minute editing going
on. Also, I mean, literally.
Just you have the slots open. It's just get it, cut it, digitize it, slap that shit in. People don't care if your documentary footage, especially footage of real events, isn't the most high quality.
Right.
Right.
Okay.
It can
all
be draining.
Your transitions. Like if I'm watching a documentary and there's an out of focus shot, my brain goes to the point of, oh shit, that is real. Well, what is happening right now? The cameraman can't get too quick enough or woman
right.
can't get too quick enough. Mm-hmm. So like.
Or the cameraman's stupid.
Right. Or he's just lazy and checking his phone.
And ineffective.
Yeah. No, but I mean like. No, but my point is that like those moments are so real that they have to put it in there the way it is, and there's like a dirtiness to that that I think all documentary film fans kind of love because you caught a real moment.
You're more forgiving in that. The other thing that I'm curious about this movie too that I want to see. It looks like there's also some like. Because there have been some amazing technological advances in terms of stuff, and he's showing some of that. Like, look, it's bad. It's getting bad. It's getting worse. But. Because that's part of the problem.
Here's the science behind the solution.
Here's some great solutions that we need to get behind.
Although it is the world is crazy, and I think you could keep making these movies. The idea of self-driving cars, the idea of because I just heard a whole report about like people on bikes, and how like their incidence of accidents with self-driving cars is way less with people on bikes. Like and so it just because they're not angry because the
sensors.
Yeah. Then the sensors, they understand. And, you know, it's almost like the same technology that are selling in cars right now, where if you're not paying attention and there's something coming up, your car will automatically brake for you. It kind
right.
of that's literally that expanded out into like driving. But they don't drive angry like humans do. And
well,
so,
you know, I've also like on my YouTube show, Political Vigilante, I found some articles like one of them, this new technology, they found they've developed solar panels that can take moisture from the air and create drinkable water. So you can just have a clean water source. Like you could be living out in the middle of the desert and have clean water.
I mean, I want solar panels on my house so bad. I don't understand. I don't understand why huge swaths of the desert of our country, I mean, huge swaths of it,
just aren't solar panels.
Lined with solar panels, because nobody gives a shit what it looks like. You could power the entire western half of
the country.
That drive
to Vegas could power Vegas.
Could power Vegas, but you could literally power the entire western part of the country. Like, do you know that because of all the solar panels in California, we've had to...
Excess. We've had excess.
Excess, and we have to sell, or excuse me, pay for it to go to like Arizona and some other places as well. So
we have to pay for it to leave?
Pay
energy?
For it to give it to somebody else. So I feel like...
Well, also, too, like whenever
it serves us right.
That's why this movie, I feel like, is so important because of all these things that are on the tip of our tongue that we're talking about and why people just need to see this. And the problem is the wrong people aren't seeing it.
I would recommend.
Well, the companies are very skilled. They have spent hundreds of millions of dollars to let people know, maybe climate changes
may
happening.
Not be real. May
right.
not be real.
Or we're coming up with a cleaner gas.
Now, this is like one of those things that's almost impossible. Is can you go see a movie like this with an open mind? Can you just say,
on a first date?
Oh yeah. Could I see a documentary like this?
Can you
with
have
an open
sex
mind?
In a theater
could I,
while?
Could
watch?
I be?
Can I jerk
could
off?
Could I be undecided about jerking
scene.
Off in the movie theater? Could I be undecided?
Oh, wind turbines!
Like, look, I'm not doing this, honey. The sun is doing it.
Now I have to sell it back to Arizona.
Oh shit!
No.
So
I think
that's our episode.
I think you can go into it with an open mind.
Yeah, I think you
that's
can.
A good way.
Mm-hmm. All right. Well, cool movies to watch, you guys. Randy Sklar, where can people find you on the internet? Your podcast?
Our podcast. So we've got the two podcasts. We moved them from Earwolf over to and rebranded them and renamed them to Feral Audio. So we've got Dumb People Town, which our last, we have a night, I don't know when this drops tonight.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
So Tony Hale. From Veep. He's our guest for this week.
Veep.
He's amazing. Kumail Nanjiani was last week. Next week, Tiffany Haddish from The Girls Trip. She was amazing. And then the week after that, Jason Mantzoukas. So great guests on that show, Dumb People Town at Feral Audio. And then if you're a sports fan, and you may have some fans who
we have some sports crossover.
We do a show. We've taken a deeper dive into sports on our old show, which was Sklarbro Country, which is now called A View from the Cheap Seats. It's in the sports and recreation section on iTunes, also at Feral. But if you look up View from the Cheap Seats, again, some good guests. Adam McKay is coming on this week.
Nice.
Oh,
we got Burr coming on, who I know all things comedy. He's the master. He's the gold standard here. But, like guys like The Fighter and The Kid, Brian Callen and Brandon, those guys are great too. So it's a deeper dive into sports, kind of in the same way you guys dive deeply into movies here and unapologetic. Now we're like, we don't care. This is what we love and this is what we're going into. So we're excited about both of those.
All right,
guys,
check
it out. Also, Earbuds is only available at comedyfilmnerds.com until July 27th, and we have to pull it as per the agreement with our distributor because it goes wide in September.
So literally you have 2 days to get the film. That includes DVDs and all downloads, and then we have to pull it, and there will be a period of time, 3 months.
90 days, yeah.
9 days where we cannot sell it on the site. So
you guys both have to stay 501 yards away from every game.
Yeah,
from
a download.
Order, yeah,
from
every download.
We have restraining orders against
from
our
the download.
Own
download. Nope, you can't touch it. Cannot touch it.
So if you haven't bought it yet, please do within the next 2 days. Otherwise, you won't be able to get it until the release date.
Thanks for the Sklar Brothers for being on the show. Thanks for everybody at ATC, Aaron Brungart, and the entire team. My name is Graham Elwood.
And I'm Chris Mancini. And as always, remember,
Han shot first
in Arizona.